You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Lloret de Cadí.
Where are we, Fran?
Good afternoon. Here we are on Lloret de Cadí, right in the middle of the province of Alicante.
A famous Vuelta climb, horrible climb. We drove up it. I'm Richard Moore. That was Fran Reyes and Daniel Freeb.
Hello.
Hello, Daniel.
How's it going?
All right. How are you?
You don't sound so surprised to see me. Can I immediately announce the first mistake of yesterday's podcast? The first errata.
Oh, my goodness.
Yesterday, I think I said that the statue at Lloret de Cadí was a homage to, an homage to José María Jiménez. It is actually just, it's a generic cyclist who, well, it was put there to honour all of the stage winners here. And I don't think it's been updated, actually. I think it's missing the last winner, which was David Moncoutier. Yeah. I think, it's obviously missing Julian Alaphilippe, isn't it?
It's missing Julian Alaphilippe. Don't spoil Fran's tale of the etapa, though. Fran, first things first, no jokes tonight, okay?
Oh, come on.
No jokes.
I had a good one.
No. You're banned at least for... You've got to work on them a bit better and might let you crack a joke.
No jokes. Am I allowed football references?
No football references.
I had a good chat with Marco Haller this morning, the Katusha rider, about our common love of...
Yeah, he always waves at you, you were saying.
Yeah, nice. He's a huge, huge Arsenal fan.
We have got lots to talk about tonight, not only the race, but the overnight drama and a growing rumour as well that's not of the positive variety. But before we get to any of that, Fran, hit us with your tale of the etapa, please.
I'm going to hit you hard. No, come on. So, stage 8 of the Vuelta a España from Egin in Albacete to Lloret del Cadí, here in Alicante. Beautiful mountains around, great surroundings, although the climb is not gentle at all to anyone. This was a stage well suited for a breakaway to succeed, and therefore it took quite a while for the main escape group to be established. It took about an hour of fighting until 20-odd men group got away. Nelson Oliveira from Movistar team was only 3 minutes behind Chris Froome on the GC, and therefore Team Sky did keep a steady, fast pace in order to control the breakaway and make sure that Chris Froome wasn't going to lose their red jersey. Camacho Red del Cati, two riders of this breakaway attacked and proved to be a step above everybody else. Those were Boras, Rafał Majka, and Quickstep's Julian Alaphilippe. They were later joined by Jan Polak, Slovenian rider for Team UAE Emirates, and they reached the summit of this amazingly hard climb together. After the 3 kilometers of favorable terrain down to the finish line, the things came down to a sprint on which Julian Alaphilippe was simply impressive. He won with one leg.
Is this confirmed?
Was that a result of the fighting earlier on in the stage that you described earlier? Julian Alaphilippe only had one leg left at the finish.
Exactly.
Amazing stuff.
Doesn't it make even better the show that we saw today?
So
Alaphilippe won. Poland came in second. Majka third. Meanwhile, on the GC front, the bunch arrived together to the bottom of the Lloret del Cadí climb. It obviously exploded as soon as the first ramps were tackled. Courageous efforts by Cannondale's Mike Boots was followed by Contador, while Chris Froome kept on a steady pace to step by step join the head of the race a bit later. Only Alberto Contador was able to match Froome's speed, and they arrived to the finish line together. The rest of the GC riders obviously lost time. Nibali, Aru, Zachary and Chavez lost 17 seconds to Froome. The BMC duo with TJ Van Garderen and Nicolas Roche dropped 28 seconds off their basket. So, Froome keeps the leader jersey with a comfortable and enlarged margin of 28 seconds on Esteban Chavez and 41 on Nicolas Roche. Matteo Trentin keeps the points jersey leadership, and Davide Villela does so with the mountains classifications. And do you know what team is the leader of the team classification?
What team is leading the team's classification?
Yeah. Movistar team.
Movistar.
And you thought they weren't riding? No, they are racing. They are racing for one of these secondary objectives.
Yeah. Interesting.
I was actually quite curious. I was quite intrigued as to how Oliveira got so close to the red jersey. And because he's not a general classification rider, he's a good time trialist, but that indicates that, you know, so poor are Movistar's options at this Vuelta that they're really, anyone who's got any semblance of GC ability, they're making them race every day and stay as close as possible to the front of the GC.
Yeah, and that's something that they've done quite often in the past. You know, I remember those Giri d'Italia, where there was no actual candidate from Movistar's roster for the race. They just made the 9 riders on the lineup take turns to fight for the best possible standing on the finish line in order to adapt the times for the team classification.
Well, listen, Julian Alaphilippe was a very impressive winner, continuing quick steps, incredibly impressive. Well, to looking at the stages so far, second, first, seventh, third, 23rd and first. That's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So he was a great stage winner. We'll talk about him a bit later on. The overnight story, or the morning story, concerned Team Sunweb and the expulsion of Warren Barguil from the team. Don't think anybody saw that coming. I spoke to Mark Reef, their sports director, yesterday morning, and Sam Oman, the promising young rider on the team. And yeah, I mean, quite a dramatic step, unusual, but it's not unheard of. Andy Schleck was thrown off the Vuelta a few years ago when he was also in the midst or about to change teams for going out. Well, that was
No suggestion at this point that Warren Barguil was out drinking until 8 in the morning.
Absolutely not. But we went to the start this morning. Daniel spoke to Mark Reef, the sports director at Sunweb. Here's a little of what he had to say.
We want to be open about it as a team. As you can also read in the press statement, it is pretty sensitive information what we already share there. Warren is still a respected rider, appreciated rider in our team. He meant a lot, and he's also still meaning a lot as he's still a member of the team. And I think that we are, as an employee, we also want to deal respectfully with our team members, and we also want to keep it to a press release. And I hope that that you understand that. I think that that everybody can have his own opinion about it. We made team goals, we made appointments up front, and we also evaluate that internally, and that's what I can say about it. That's not something what I cannot confirm or not confirm.
Mark, was this just one incident, or was it a series of incidents over the last week?
We made clear appointments, and we also evaluate that always. It's also what I said before. It's sensitive information, and we also hope that you respect it, that we keep that internally.
And Mark, can you just tell us how Warren, or how you told Warren, and when you told Warren?
We told him yesterday evening.
And he left Spain straight away?
Yeah, he left this morning. Yeah. Now, of course, we were prepared for it. We always know that cases like this, or that it can happen. So we were prepared for it. In general, we make appointments with riders, and we speak about certain possibilities, situations. So in that way, we are prepared for it. We had a meeting together with the riders, and that's something what we keep in turn, what we said there. I think that Warren is in general a member who's always giving something for the team, and that's also what he did at this moment.
Mark, just on strategy as well, we noticed that the tour, that he kind of lost time deliberately early in the tour so that he could go for stage wins. Here he didn't seem to be sitting up, he seems to be almost riding for GC.
It's also part of our tactics that we had, so that was still in the plan, yeah. I think that we work as a team, we have clear appointments up front. Okay. And
Mark, was there a feeling among the riders in the team, did this come from the riders that they were annoyed with Warren?
That's something what I don't want to especially in detail come to that point.
How was the decision made? Was it just yourself, or was it in conversation?
The general team, as a team, we made the decision.
It's a very dramatic decision.
Yeah, that is it always. Yeah. It's always to come to a point that you have to take a decision like that. Yeah.
So Mark Reef there explained that he didn't really want to elaborate too much on the statement, which said that the team had clear goals, deeply anchored in the team's way of working. It was all about supporting Wilco Kelderman here. And what was interesting to me, the flashpoint seems to be yesterday's stage when Barguil stayed in that front group and didn't help Kelderman when he was in difficulty, as Sam Omen did. And that seems to have brought matters to a head, but there have been rumblings of a feeling over the course of the Vuelta so far that Barguil was riding his own race. What was interesting was that he was very high placed overall. They had three riders in the top 15 at the end of yesterday's stage. Unlike at the Tour where Barguil sat up on the Planche des Belles Filles stage, I remember, and waved at the cameras, and I think when we saw that, we wondered just how serious he was about the Tour. It was all about losing time in order to go for stage wins. Here at the Vuelta, he has been riding almost like he's been going for GC. So although he said stages would be his goal here, it's been quite confusing. And what clearly is this feeling within the team was that he wasn't a team player here.
Yeah, and I think more confusing probably for him than the fact that he's leaving next year has been the huge leap, the huge rise in his profile over the past couple of months. And at the Tour de France, you know, at times it had to be seen to be believed, just the adulation and the volume and the magnitude of the support that he was getting. And he really is, he's become a megastar of French cycling. Then he comes here to the Vuelta, obviously much lower profile, and he's told that he has to work for, on paper, an inferior rider, Wilco Kelderman. And at the start, I must say, Neem and Barguil seemed fine with this idea. He was presented to the press. He was rolled out with the other big hitters of this Vuelta at the pre-race press conference. But he did say that, OK, he would go for stage wins, but he was also here to help Kelderman. I don't know whether he's had a change of heart. I've heard a couple of sort of anecdotal reports of from other journalists saying that he seemed moody or he seemed tetchy or something seems to be up the last couple of days, but I didn't detect anything of that nature. And there have been some rumblings over the last few weeks that it wasn't just a case, him leaving the team, it wasn't simply a case of getting a better offer. They didn't make him an offer to renew his contract, Sunweb.
He
broke his contract, but they didn't at any point really stand in his way, which you would think is a slightly strange position to adopt.
I wonder, I mean, you know, this coincides with the rise of Tom Dumoulin and maybe the sense that Barguil had after the Giro that, you know, come the Tour de France next year, no matter how he got on at the Tour this year, he would be perhaps struggling to fit into that team with Tom Dumoulin there. But, you know, there is a history at that team of riders rising, becoming big stars and then falling out of favour. Marcel Kittel being an obvious example.
Well, a similar example, Rich, because there as well, he had a year left on his contract and Ivan Spreckenbrink, the manager, didn't make it particularly difficult for Marcel Kittel to leave. On the contrary, I don't think they asked for any money from Quickstep. He joined Quickstep, and we all remember the now infamous press release, which reminded me in some ways of the press release today. It was something along the lines of, if Marcel Kittel sees fit to or wants to leave the highly focused, highly professional, successful, driven environment of Team Sunweb or whatever it was called at the time, then we will not stand in his way. And yeah, it was of a similar tenor, what they put out today, wasn't it?
Quite a dramatic fall from grace for Barguil, isn't it? A bit Icarus-like. You know, he's been flying very high, as you say, that, you know, basking in this stardom. I remember the reception he had in Marseille in the time trial. It was quite phenomenal, even better than for Romain Bardet, actually. I think the polka dot jersey has special resonance in France. I think back as well to a thing I mentioned before, but I remember John Degenkolb having a go at Warren Barguil for not working for him in an early stage of the Tour de France that was won by Tony Martin over the cobbles in 2015, I think it was. And, you know, I'm not saying that that was part of a pattern, but it seems to be in that program that if you get too big for your boots, you're out. And that there is a very much a sense of the team there, I think, to a greater extent than a lot of other teams, and a sense of there being a project. And what they have been very good at has been developing riders long term, and they have recently signed up Tom Dumoulin for 3 years, so they're really backing him. And, you know, Barguil maybe just didn't fit into that. They have, as I say, got younger riders coming through. One of them I thought we'd play the interview tonight, Sam Omen, a very promising young Dutch rider, 22 years old, rode well again today, one to watch, I think. Let's hear from him now. Sam, first of all, I mean, how are you finding your first Grand Tour? You're riding very well, but how have you found the first few days?
Well, obviously, yesterday was the first really war stage of this Vuelta. And before, there were some chaotic stages with the wind in the beginning. But afterwards, it has been quite calm. Some hard stages, some hard moments, but not a war stage like yesterday. Yeah, it's been tough so far, but okay.
Well, your team leader is Wilco Kelderman. Is your main job going to be to support him?
Yeah, that's the main job from begin to the end, to support him and make sure he has a good GC position.
I was saying to your director, Mark, there that you've got three riders in the top 14 at the moment. You obviously had a really good team time trial. The team is obviously riding extremely well.
Yeah, we're also having a great year so far. I think speaks for itself with Tom winning the Giro and a really successful tour. Yeah, we're also doing a good job so far in this Vuelta. And it gives a boost to everybody, I think. That's only positive.
What does it do for a young guy like you to see your teammate win the Giro and then Warren obviously win a couple of stages King of the Mountains at the Tour de France?
Yeah, it's a boost of motivation. It's just amazing to see it. And like I say, you get really motivated from it and motivated to work really hard to help them and achieve also high things in cycling.
Well, those guys have been with the team a long time. They've been young guys who've been developed, and you're, I guess, looking yourself as maybe the next one.
Hopefully, yeah, but not for this moment. I'm here to support Wilco in the first place, and I don't know what the future will bring, but so far things are running well, yeah.
Are you you've not ridden 3 weeks yet, but are you the sort of rider you think who will be able to cope with the 3 weeks well?
That's the big question. That's what I'm starting to find out now with this Vuelta. This is the first step in the discovery of how I'm doing in a Grand Tour.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. 20% off for all you lovely listeners with the code CPAUG20 at scienceandsport.com. Now, I mentioned at the start of the episode a rumour that seems to be gathering a bit of strength over the course of the day, and that is sadly concerning Cannondale Drapac. They announced towards the end of the Tour de France that they had found sponsorship for next year, Oath, the big media company in America. I gather there's a little bit of uncertainty now about the future of the team. Riders have, I think, been pressing for assurances about, you know, what's going to happen. They recently agreed a 3-year deal with Rigoberto Urán, but that is in some doubt now, and certainly riders and agents are, if not panicking, then certainly putting out feelers to other teams. I know of a few that are doing that. There's even talk of Urán desperately seeking a new home. We don't know if that's true, but it's a common thing. We've only been recently talking actually about how sort of healthy the transfer market has seemed recently, with no teams apparently folding this year and at least one new team coming on. So that would really flood the marketplace with some very good riders if that was to happen. We hope it doesn't. No official word from the team on its future. But yeah, as I say, a rumour that's been gathering a bit of force today.
Yeah, the first time I heard this rumor was back in June, because a Spanish website, Cicloland, published that Cannondale were pulling out as main sponsor of Jonathan Bauter's team and that they were seeking desperately for a new main partner. But yet that rumor didn't gain any traction. During the Tour de France, we saw an immense amount of publicity for the Slipstream squad, in particularly in economic newspapers and media in the US, and as a result of that, maybe, or related to that, we saw how Oath jumped on board, and there were talks of a second big potential sponsor being bound to agree and join. I heard some unconfirmed rumors that the sponsor may come from Colombia, the home of Rigoberto Urán, but so far I was unable to confirm it with any other sources.
Yeah, and the Oath deal, when that was announced, I mean, I don't know whether I just wasn't paying attention. It wouldn't be the first time, but I was a bit unclear as to what level of financial support there was going to be, whether there was going to be any financial support. They seemed quite loath to reveal the details of that.
And it
was
loath.
Loth, yes, very good. And it was mainly, the way it was sort of pitched was that it was mainly going to be providing a platform with a view to maybe gaining further sponsorship in the future. But of course, you know, you looked at the sponsors that they currently had or have in place. Cannondale, there have been rumours about them pulling out for years. And there are no other sort of big hitters or big name sponsors, big name backers waiting in the wings as sort of sub-sponsors who might want to step up. And I've really not heard many rumours over the past 2 or 3 years about successful negotiations that they might be conducting. But yeah, it potentially leaves a lot of riders, Rich. You mentioned a lot of good riders. There are also a lot of riders who, you know, will be struggling to find new employers because they haven't had amazing results or they haven't really established themselves in the Pro Tour yet, a lot of the guys.
As far as we can understand, this is by no means certain that the team will fold. There just seems to be uncertainty, and I think it's still very much in the balance. The riders, of course, the riders and their agents need or want and crave certainty. And I think that's the thing that's missing at the moment. It doesn't mean that an answer won't be found. And I think we all hope that it is, because they have been a breath of fresh air in the sport for a decade or so now, the Slipstream team in its various guises. Back to the stage, chaps,
talking of leaving.
Oh, talking
Rich,
of exits.
Talking of getting out.
Daniel, you've got to go.
I've kind of pulled the plug on participation in this podcast.
But we're staying, not permanently. Who knows?
Depends how this one goes down.
No, listen, we're staying in the same hotel tonight, so do save me a place at dinner.
Okay, we'll do. Murcia. I'm looking forward to some. I don't think it's going to be much Movida in Murcia. This is what I heard. I booked the hotel, Rich, thinking that we have a couple of nights in big towns and, you know, it'll be bound to be some stuff going on at the weekend, maybe a fiesta or so, but I hear that Murcia is not really known for its
nightlife.
No, it's
not really the place to be at this point of the year. You know, all the parties in Cartagena, which is the seaside version of Murcia. You should have been in Alicante. That's where the Queen's stage is happening today.
Okay, Daniel, see you tomorrow. Well, we'll see you on the podcast tomorrow. So, Fran, an exciting stage. You know, a typical Vuelta stage of these short climbs. So far, Froome has looked the strongest rider, confirmed that today, but, you know, he's still got a very small lead. And, of course, you'd expect that to stretch out on the longer climbs. But Alaphilippe, he's had a very, very hard season. Problems with crashes and injuries. Missed the Tour de France, of course. Forget this is only his second Grand Tour, his first Vuelta. So a very good win. He did say in the press conference that his finish line was the top of the climb. You know, if he got to that, and we were watching it, him and Rafał Majka, Majka was an obvious favourite for the stage, some good work setting him up from his teammates in the breakaway. But if Alaphilippe could stay with him to the top of the climb, he was always a favourite for the win.
Yeah, what was particularly impressive about the way that Alaphilippe won today is how he held the pace of Rafał Majka. Of course, the Polish rider was giving it all. You know, he knew that he had to drop Alaphilippe in advance, because if not, his fast sprint, his fast finish was by no means unmatchable by Majka. Yet he managed to keep there. You know, when he won this time trial in Paris-Nice earlier in the year, there were some talks of maybe him becoming a Grand Tour rider rather than a Classics one, which is what seems to be his specialization today. And seeing how he coped today with the climb and how his recovery seems to be pretty good since he's racing at the same level now in this eighth stage as he was on the second.
I think Paris-Nice, if not the death knell, then Paris-Nice did suggest that his future isn't as a GC rider in races with big mountain stages.
You think so?
Well, he's still very young, but he's a bit punchier than that, isn't he? I think he's a rider who'll win lots of hard, you know, Flesh Wallonne, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, those kind of races, and maybe week-long stage races without major mountain stages, multiple mountain stages, but who knows? He is still very young. There was almost a surprise with Jan Palance, the rider who won on Mount Etna, didn't he, at the Giro? He almost caught them by surprise. He did exactly the right thing. He got them on the descent and went straight past them. And Fran, you spoke to Jan Palance at the finish. Let's hear from him now. Here he is.
So, breakaway specialist, and you came quite close to nail it again on a Grand Tour.
I just said I have to try day by day. I was already one stage in the breakaway. Wasn't feeling quite legs this day, but today I was a better day. the climb, yeah, I just have to go my rhythm because it was kind of steep and I just prefer to go my rhythm like normally. So I just try to keep the safe distance between the guys in front and me. Yeah. I risk a little bit in descent. I know they will probably look at each other in the final, so I was able to get back. And then I know it will be hard to beat the Alaphilippe in the sprint, but I try, he get a big gap, so at least I was able to bring a second place.
Yeah, but that was quite a sprint by Alaphilippe. I mean, it seemed like he could have won with one leg.
it looks like he was at the start of the stage today, but yeah, no, I think he's a good descender, so here, just take some rest in that last descent, and then he did a few breaths and was managed to bring the sprint.
It's still an amazing performance by you. It seems like the Slovenian success vibe going on in the UAE Emirates team.
Yeah, but not only UAE. I think this year the whole Slovenian cycling show, we are good riders. We work well together in Slovenia, so it's good to have more riders, not just one, to compete with the best.
So that was Jan Plants.
Yeah, definitely a very good ride by the Slovenian rider. One who is delivering consistent, successful breakaways on the Grand Tours. That's quite an impressive feat for such an young and one would say unproven rider in other fronts or races. That was the point that he was making at the final in the interview, that there is actually some kind of good vibe growing in the Slovenian scene of cycling. After all, with Mohoric and Polang, we've had two very good examples, but they are not the only ones. For example, in the Vrhaimirida team, there is Domen Novak, who today was part of the recovery. The other day I was speaking to a friend working on the staff of the Bahrain Merida team, and he told me wonders about Novak. He told me that he climbs great, and that after a first year in World Tour, they were quite surprised at the great level he had performed, and that they thought that he could maybe become a GT contender in the future.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you to Rafa, as ever, for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. You might have seen on social media, we did manage to get a Pedal de Charme t-shirt to our winner, Larry Warbass. Unfortunately, crashed out of the race, but he very graciously accepted the t-shirt and recorded a little video for us. Thanks to Aqua Blue Sport as well for organising that. That was very much appreciated. Yeah, I think Larry will wear his t-shirt with pride, but it's a shame that his welt ended the way it did. If you want to look like Larry, then I don't mean with the bandages and so on, but with the t-shirt, go to thecyclingpodcast.com shop and it'll take you to the Cycling Podcast page on the RAFA website. Now, lots to talk about still, Fran, with the overall picture, because we saw a bit of a shootout on the climb there. Chris Froome ominously strong, his team was ominously strong all day. We saw Simon Yates have a little go, and you know, this is what we've been waiting for. I spoke to Jack Haig at the finish, and he was saying, you know, there's still a lot of racing to be done, and those three riders they have, Esteban Chavez and the Yates brothers. Chavez is really in quite a strong position within the team as leader. Adam Yates looks pretty strong. Simon Yates perhaps is the least strong of the three. He did pay for that effort today, lost a little bit more time. But there's still dangerous riders. There's going to remain dangerous riders for the rest of the race. And Jack Haig did promise that they would shake things up a little bit. But Froome is obviously clearly very strong. And the only rider who really seems to be able to match him is Alberto Contador.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising for several of us, the Spanish media, how Contador coped with the stage today, because it was a real showdown. It was a real mano a mano between Chris Froome and Alberto Contador, and the rider from Pinto El Pistolero did actually manage to keep his pace. After the stage of Andorra, I clearly doubted whether he was on top form or not. But today he proved to be at least close to Froome's level and made the point when talking to the media that the Andorra stage was a mirage. I always thought that a mirage was some kind of a positive thing, but he meant
maybe aberration would be a better word. I mean, Andorra's beginning now to look like an aberration. He was ill, he recovered from that, and he's at the level. I don't think it's a surprise particularly that he's at the level that he's at. I mean, if you look at Contador all year round, I mean, look at him in Paris-Nice, look at him throughout the year, he's usually very consistent.
Yeah, but think of the Tour de France. On the Tour de France, he was clearly one or two levels below Alberto Contador and the rest of the GC guys. And in a 3 week time...
Well, he was
time,
very poor at the Tour. Is it which is more surprising, the level he's at now here or the poor level he was at the Tour? Which is the bigger surprise? Now I'm asking you a question.
Yeah. For me, in my opinion, the biggest surprise is the level that he sat on this race. Because after all, of course, he's consistent throughout the year. But we can also have noticed during the last couple of seasons how Alberto Contador's level and Alberto Contador's results have faded a bit. You know, it's true that he's lost several races by tiny margins of 2, 5, 10 seconds, but when you lose several races by these very same margins, it's not a matter of luck, it's a matter of a trend. You know, it's a decline that is to be expected when a rider has already surpassed the 35 years of age and the 15 years of professional career, which is also something that we can't forget. Contador has been up there for so many seasons that even with these 6 months sabbatical that he had, it's still a long time to be focused on the rest.
I have to pull you up there, Fran. He's not 35 yet.
Oh, come on.
He's not. He's 34. He's 35 later this year, Contador. So he's 34.
Yeah.
I mean, he's certainly... I mean, the decline is obvious. We're seeing a last hurrah here. Will he sustain it over 3 weeks? We don't know. As well as Alberto Contador and Chris Froome, another of the overall guys who impressed today, once again, was Michael Woods, the Cannondale Drapet rider. If there is uncertainty around the team, he didn't really show it today. He was very good again today, and for a while he looked like the only guy who could really match those two.
Yeah, and indeed, the first good attack that to tear things apart was his. I waited quite a bit, melting under the sun in the doping control here at Jordi Ducati in order to speak to him, because I am really impressed by the consistency of his performances. I mean, we already knew that he had those watts on his legs in order to match the best riders of the world in particular climbs, but during this Vuelta, we are talking about being a step above, because he is consistently there day after day. First things first, what do you make of your performance today?
I'm a bit disappointed that I wasn't able to stick with Froome and Contador, but at the same time, like, I'm excited because I know I have the legs to do it. I got excited and attacked too early. I think if I was more patient, I could have been finishing with them. But at the same time, you know, that's racing. Sometimes you have to just throw it out on the line.
Disappointment because of not being with Contador and Froome. Do you realize we are talking here about two of the best climbers of the world?
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I want to win. I want to try and be competitive, and yeah, like I think I've proven that I can climb with these guys in the past, and now it's instead of just being there, I want to actually try and beat them and win. You know, so yeah, obviously like excitement, but at the same time, you know, like I know what I'm capable of, and that's why I'm a bit disappointed at this moment.
Yeah, what do you make also of the fact that you are being so consistent during this Vuelta? You are not only with these guys in one specific day, but day after day and after day, you are up there.
I think that has a lot to do with I had a good training camp prior to this race, but also my teammates. Simon Clark has been just amazing in positioning me, but also, you know, Tom Scully and Tom Van Asbroek and Will Clark and Tom Screenge, all the guys on the team really have just played such a huge role in positioning me that, you know, I feel so lucky coming into every final because I'm in a great position.
How long do you plan to carry on with this amazing performance, amazing level of performance?
Oh, thank you. don't know. Hopefully I can keep it going tomorrow and then just kind of take it day by day. My big goal is to get a stage win. I mean, the GC is important to me, but I think the more important is winning a stage. So if that means losing more time in the GC, I'm okay with that as long as I can try and win a stage.
You have a quite great chance for your qualities tomorrow.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I hope so. It's a really good climb, really suits me. So again, hopefully I can have a performance like I did today, but not be as foolish and go early.
Froome, in his press conference, you know, said that this was the first time he'd ever done an altitude training camp before the Vuelta, between the Tour and the Vuelta. He's taken it, as we've said several times, very, very seriously, hasn't he? He's brought a strong team. Yeah. He's prepared well for it. Still not won a race this season, Chris Froome, as in crossing the line first in an individual race. He obviously won the Tour de France, which is a big race. But he'll want to win a stage at some point as well, I would imagine.
You know, Rich, the point I was more interested about of Chris Froome's conferences was how he was asking a lot from his teammates. He thanked them time and again, both on TV and in the press room. And it's just because he is making tough asks by telling them to control the race from the very beginning until the very end, and to keep a high pace when there is the lesser offensive off the front of the race. You know, keep in mind that we are in September almost, and the season is almost over, so the forces are fading quite a lot. And
yeah, you were saying earlier as well, Fran, about the lesson learned from last year, where they were obviously caught out on the stage to Formigal, but they had used a lot of energy, a lot of resources in the days leading up to that.
Exactly, particularly in the previous stage to Andorra, this was a huge deal of attacking by Orica Scott and Movistar team, and Team Sky had to do their best in order to control the race. That put a lot of fatigue in the legs of Team Sky riders, and they clearly paid for it the following day in Formigal.
Still a long way to go, and it has been a very, very tough first week. Hot, you know, hard stages, long stages. Nicholas Roach made the point tonight as well that the stages have been unusually long for the Vuelta. You know, we're used to seeing quite short stages here, but there have been a lot of 200-kilometre stages here. Mm. So that's going to take its toll. Still a lot of racing to be done. And, you know, Jack Haig, the Orica Scott rider, said the goal for them is still to try and win the race with one of those three riders. Now, they may do so. We don't often see this, but I think back to the 2008 Tour de France and Carlos Sastre winning, probably as a result of having the Schleck brothers, that three-pronged attack worked extremely well there. That was in the absence of a rider like Chris Froome, who does appear to be on a different level to everybody else. But if the door is ajar, they will push it open, Orica. And I think they're still capable of providing this race with a twist.
Yeah, and never forget that Contador is here, as Contador, you say, in a last hurrah, and he is probably going to attack in every spot available.
He could be the facilitator. Who knows? Yeah. Anyway, there's still a long way to go. Let's get on the road, because we've got quite a long way to go tonight as well.
Road to Alicante, but still, it's a very nice place to be tonight.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks very much, Fran. We'll speak again tomorrow.
Yeah, hopefully.
And you might be allowed to crack a joke tomorrow night. Let's see.
Yeah, or maybe sing. Who knows?
Well, do you want to sing us out with some Beatles?
Oh, you asking me to sing? That was surprising. Rain seems to be coming now.